right, ladies and gentlemen, I hope everybody's having a fantastic morning, noon, or night, wherever you guys are in the world, whatever time it is that you're watching this. All I can say is you are certainly in the right place because we have an incredible guest today. I'm unfortunately not joined by my notorious companion and co-host, Mr. Brendan Veman. He's got a scheduling conflict here, but I am going toe-to-toe with one of the best traders in the world, literally one of the best traders this world has ever seen. In fact, there had been chapters of books written about him. One of my favorite books, Market Wizards by Jack Schwager, which was just an incredible sort of look into several different traders and their styles and how they manage risk. So anyhow, I'm going to shut up and I'm going to let the legend do the talking. We've got Tony Saliba here, who is just in his own right, an incredible man, founder and CEO of Liquid Mercury, deep in the crypto options space. And I'm so excited that Tony is joining the Crypto 101 podcast. So Tony, how the hell are you? And welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast.
Thanks, Bryce. I'm doing pretty well. Great to see you again.
Yeah, no, great to see you again. And
have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus 500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices like energy, metals, Forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus 500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
Look, I just wanted to, I thought our first conversation was so incredible. And a lot of that was just behind the scenes, just kind of personally. And I said, man, oh my gosh, we need to have a longer form conversation. So thank you for hopping in. But everybody who watches the Crypto 101 podcast, more or less, they're folks like me, right? Just normal everyday people who kind of found crypto, got excited about it and said, well, not only is the technology really cool, but there's also a huge kind of economic opportunity here to make a lot of money. There's lots of volatility, there's lots of excitement. And so we're going to pick your brain on trading strategies and viewpoints of the market. But we also want to talk about Liquid Mercury. But I first want to go way back. I think you said it was 40 years ago you got in the market when you started trading.
45, yeah.
45. There we go. I want to know, how did you start trading? And obviously, crypto wasn't a thing back then, so you were trading stocks and bonds. But how'd you start the whole journey to become a trader?
I fortuitously got the opportunity to be a account rep, a so-called stockbroker, at a small regional brokerage firm in Indianapolis. I went to Indiana University, and one of the alumni who I'd gotten to know through Indiana activities just asked me like a week before graduation, what are you going to do, Saliba? And I was getting an accounting degree. I didn't like accounting per se. It was pretty boring. This is 1977, so 46 years ago. And I was being courted by Procter & Gamble and Deluxe Check Printers and a number of other big names for a sales role, brand management or marketing. And this guy said, hey, you ever think about being a stockbroker? And I sounded interesting, but I didn't really know what that meant. And I said, where? And he said, Indianapolis. And I said, but the exchanges are in like New York and Chicago. So he said, no, we do it over the phone. And remember, in 77, it was a good 20 years before the internet really came to life. And I thought I was going to be on the phone. Hello, New York. buy, Chicago sell. It wasn't that at all. It was going to work to find investors in sleepy little Indiana towns during the malaise of the Jimmy Carter years, where the stock market, a big day of trading was 10 or 11 million shares. We do that in the first heartbeat. You know, we'll do a billion shares in the first few minutes now. And it was tough for a 22-year-old guy to go talk to farmers and their wives about investing in economic development bonds. Mm-hmm. So one day I just said, hey guys, who makes all the money in this business? And they said, the guys on the floor. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait a minute. I grew up in Chicago. I caddied for these guys. And I made my way back to Chicago through a lot of a few different bits of luck, just meeting the right people. I clerked for a while. And then I met a guy down on the floor who I caddied for. And he didn't know what he was doing. He was just, he had sold a business and he was down there dabbling. It's in the early days of options. And I knew what I had learned in a short period of time how to handle myself with some spreads. And I made a trade for him, made him money within a week or two. And then he said, can you do that again? And I said, yeah. And he's,
you're like a vending machine. Just put in a quarter and get out something better. And can we do it again?
Yeah, get me on a seat. And that's where it began. So it was tough. It was tough, Bryce, because you had to be a bigger person. There was no computers, and you literally had to scrap to get broker's attention. So I did my homework every night, and I learned about spreading. And I'm still like one of the biggest proponents of using option spreads for your trading vehicles. And there's a huge commonality in crypto, which we could get to.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of opportunity, in crypto options, because simply put, nobody's doing them right now. And so there's massive inefficiencies and we're definitely going to dive into that. And yes, spreading, right? Like, making sure you're pretty much hedged the entire way. And so you limit some of your upside, but you certainly limit those kind of potential disasters, which I'm sure you've probably seen people get completely blown out, lose their shirt, in person, right? One day I want to hear about some crazy trading day, whether it's on the upside or the downside. What was like, in your memory, do you have just a day that was like, oh my God, burned into my brain forever?
Well, yes. And there's a handful of them. So
I want to hear them.
when I was on the floor and when I got on a seat and actually, so I started trading in March of 79. I came down on the floor in the fall of 78, like 45 years ago right now. And I befriended some of the people that worked behind the booth. They worked for the exchange. They were the brokers, clerks and such. And there was a guy there, Jose Sanchez. We were about the same age, 23, 24 years old. And he was an artist, Bryce, and he did these sketches on trading cards of the caricatures of the people in the pit, and they would throw them at us when it was slow. And I asked him one day. I said, "Jose, can you do that? Here's a picture of what these trading cards would look like, right?" Mm-hmm. And he would just take this, and this was actually one of my Teledyne trading cards. Mm-hmm. This is for real. This was May 14th of 1983. And I saved all my cards. I have a bin full of these things. And he would draw my picture or somebody else's picture, flip it out. I said, could you put everybody together in the pit? And I have that picture right outside my door here. And I did a copy, and I gave, this was 1981, and I gave a copy of that to each and every one of the 30 people or so that were in the pit. And the reason why I bring that up is when I walk by that picture, it brings back all these different days that you're mentioning. Okay. So I'll tell you one of the days that was crazy, really, really crazy. And that was the day after the market crashed in 87. Mm-hmm. So this was October 20th of 87. It was a Tuesday. Black Monday was the 19th. And on Monday, it was disastrous, but it did one thing, Bryce. It just went down like whale turds, just slowly dropping to the bottom of the ocean without hardly any volatility. It was just relentless selling, and people were getting, there was panic, and people were getting wiped out, crossing their fingers, hoping it would bounce. But on Tuesday, the market opened significantly higher, and people were like, oh my God, here's the whipsaw, right? And the question was, is it going to continue and be like a V-shaped bounce, or watch out? And that day, it rallied in the morning for about less than an hour, 35, 45 minutes, and then headed back south again and made new lows. And
a dead cat bounce.
A dead cat bounce. And those guys that traded theoretical values, the volatilities were off the charts. Puts were going up when this index was going up. Calls were going up when the index was going down. The volatility expansion was relentless. 100 vol, 110 vol, 150 vol.
It was like crypto.
It was like crypto. It topped over 200 vol. And that meant every time the stock would move one delta, calls would move commensurately a 50 delta if they were at the monies, and puts would move, you know, they would increase in value commensurately because everybody was trying to cover. Mm-hmm. And there were grown men, professionals, sitting on the floor, their heads in their hands, places going crazy. They didn't know what to do. They didn't know whether to buy or sell. They just wanted to get out. And there was massive liquidations. It was a panic scene. Now, for me, I didn't use theoretical values. I developed my own style of trading called relative pricing. Okay. And what that means is each price was relative to another option. Okay. So I looked at all the spreads, and on these cards, this was my S&P. I'm sorry. This was from October 25th of 85 when I traded the yen, and the yen had all sorts of strikes. And I would do calculations of butterflies, verticals, diagonals, boxes, and each of those had relationships to each other. So no matter where the stock was, and no matter where the option prices were, there was a relationship that stayed within a band, a very tight band. And I would know if I'm buying near the end of the lower end of the band or selling near the higher end of the band. And they were immutable. They could not go beyond that. The option prices could. And that's what everybody normally traded based on volatility. And they could make sense of it. And to me, it was as clear as day. And I was able to cut through all the noise. For about 2 months, this happened from the crash in late October till around Christmas that year when things started to settle down. I would open the S&P 500 options pit on the CBOE every morning, and then trading would begin because I use relative pricing. I wasn't the only one using it, but I was one of the first to use it, and I kind of mastered it.
Epic. I love that. That's just such an incredible story. I think, yeah, I'm looking at the Shatkin Investment Group.
Yeah, that was my clearing firm. Oh, yeah, and these were all the prices. And I actually have a bin of thousands of these because I traded on the floor for a little over 13 years. And I saved all of these for the most part. When I started I started in 79 and I started making these cards probably by 80, late 80 or early 81. And I had my clerks band them with packing tape and labeled them. Each quarter I got a stack of them. And I'm thinking about maybe bringing them out and giving them away or raffling them off or something. Yeah. Really nostalgic. Yeah.
That's incredible. And it really makes me think, like, you know, like you mentioned, you know, you were doing this 20 years pretty much before internet-based trading ever even was like conceived. And now here we are in both traditionals and crypto. All we do is, you know, internet-based trading, you know, every firm and that's it. Right. And so I guess my question is, so we went from like a very analog world to then, you know, now it's all digital. What's kind of the next evolution for markets generally? Like within the next 5 to 10 years, I know Larry Fink from BlackRock said the next generation for markets is tokenization. And I'm curious if you kind of, you know, track along those same yeah. thought lines.
Yeah, totally. Well, it's interesting because, you know, even a year ago, he was saying the opposite. Okay. And now he actually, look, he's far wealthier than I am and he's a smart guy, but he was saying the wrong things and he had a position to defend, I guess.
Right, talking his own book.
Exactly. And then somebody tapped him on the shoulder and said, Mr. Fink, you know, here's what's really going on. And he got up to speed and
did
all this, yeah, this shit talking that he was doing about how bad, and Jamie Dimon's doing the same thing, but he knows better. I'm sure he knows better.
Yeah. And JP Morgan offers Bitcoin to their clients.
Yes. And the things that he says is just insane sometimes, but they know better. So tokenization, is it totally what's happening? Crypto is just the tip of the iceberg, you know, 12, 14 years later, it's still nascent because of the massive infrastructure build out that was required, the separation of functions, which we're used to in traditional markets, where one place doesn't do your market making, your execution, your matching, exchange matching, your clearing, your banking. That needed to be separated, exploded, and put on their own islands, which is happening.
Yeah, that happened with FTX. You know, they were kind of doing all that together and blew up.
Boy, if we didn't learn something in that regard there, it, you know.
You can't learn anything, you know, if you didn't learn anything from FTX. Yeah,
exactly. Pity us, right?
Yeah.
So you ask what is the next phase, and I'm pretty certain of this, and take this to the bank because there'll be a convergence. There is a convergence that's going to be happening. And you mentioned Fink because he's got BlackRock's got like a near 100% approval rating on their ETFs that they file with the SEC. Mm-hmm. And they're in the queue. January 10th, I think, or 11th is the deadline for the commission to weigh in on that. I think they'll approve theirs and some others, but who do you think trades this stuff? The same desks that trade the ETFs for their large institutional hedge fund clients and normal fund clients and trusts and such will need to asset allocate to this relatively new asset class, you know, 14 years old this January, still new to them, less than 5% committing any capital to the space. And now they'll have an ETF. And what happens with the ETF? There's a arb that'll go on between the spot market, whichever underlying that is, and you're going to see them both trading on the same platform. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then the next thing is tokenization of RWA, real world assets. Then the next thing will be the tokenization of intellectual property. That's happening in some ways now. You see some minor league baseball teams are tokenizing the future earning power of their young stars so they can monetize that. You and I, we have value. It's been stolen from us for the last 15 years by big tech. That's our data. We have a cookie apocalypse that's happening. It's going to be happening in January in a big way. The current iOS operating system, you see a pop-up on anytime you go to a website. You can deny them using your information because Facebook and Google and Apple and Microsoft and others have been stealing this and selling it from us. So now the individual will be taking back their data. That'll be tokenized. And every 6 months, you and I will have a refresh of our demographics, and that'll be standardized and be able to be traded. So you can monetize your own information for your own benefit. Whereas Facebook's been monetizing it and giving you, you know, Facebook page in return while they sell your data. And we've known this now for a few years, but we're finally going to take it back. And there are companies that'll help you monetize it and put it out for advertisers to buy it from you directly. Mm-hmm.
No, I love that. It's funny. I actually just literally like yesterday or a couple of days ago saw a commercial with Matthew McConaughey. And I think it was a Salesforce commercial. And all it was, he goes, well, if data is the new oil, you know, I actually forget what he said. He said something about, you know, data being like the next most valuable thing. And then like the tagline was like, Salesforce doesn't use your data. Like you are not the product, you're the customer or something like that. But I mean, I'd never really seen like a mainstream commercial that talked about you should be owning your own data and you shouldn't be getting leveraged against. And so, yeah, it's a fascinating sort of concept because people think, oh, well, yeah, like tokenization of account receivables and tokenized gold and tokenized equities, that all makes sense. But once you realize human capital is actually going to get tokenized and human labor is going to get tokenized and your attention will get tokenized the world.
Yes. And because you can tokenize it, roll it up into baskets, then it can be traded by liquidity providers on exchanges. Think in a negative way, this happened with the Great Recession and the the leveraging of mortgage-backed securities, right? And they packaged the McMansion in outside of Seattle with a high rise in Manhattan and then they put derivatives on top of that, and they were really just trading like a third derivative of the actual assets. And when the subprime loan problem hit, the whole thing came crumbling down. Well, if it was digitized, then that would have never been able to happen because
you have real-time risk alerts and
real-time. Right. Our data would be immutably created in a smart contract that can be sped around the world, you know, multiple times, versions of it. Mm-hmm. That processors who want to reach you will say, I'll exchange some money I was paying a marketing person or a representative company to find you, and you'll do it directly. And that will be traded on exchanges.
Yeah. Oh my God. No, it's going to be crazy just to see how this whole thing develops. And I'm really excited. And I kind of want to ask just, you know, your thoughts on what 2024 kind of might hold for the crypto markets, particularly, but you know, even just stocks broadly. I think that if you asked anybody December of last year or January of last year, whatever, right? Kind of this time last year, will stocks be, you know, higher, flat, or lower? Pretty much everybody would probably say flat to lower, and here we are at fresh all-time highs.
New highs, right?
Crazy. What do you think we're looking at here for 2024?
I don't see it slowing. I mean, I don't see it reversing, and I've been involved with some pretty smart people for the past year that have been very bearish. They were bullish on oil. They were bearish on equities. They were bearish on currencies. I mean, a year ago, Bitcoin was, you know, under 16,000. And so it's tripled since there. Now, one underlying theme, they're all measured. Everything we're talking about is being measured by the dollar. And so as long as you continue to inflate, anything that is not the dollar will look like it's increasing in value. Just some will increase faster than others. Now, oil hasn't for a number of reasons. And if you have a change in the administration next year, mm-hmm. and you get somebody who wants to unshackle the drilling and fracking communities from what the current administration curtailed, you'll see further depression of oil prices. But I think there will be quantitative easing again late in 2024, or maybe not so late. And that means the printing presses, just so much easier for these fiat power centers, governments that can print their own currency, like the U.S. predominantly. That's an easy way for them to pay for their programs, and it's an election year. So they're going to do that, I think. And you're going to see stock market to continue to be buoyant.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It seems like the easy answer is always, let's just mortgage the future and print more money.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's do.
Yeah, my short SPY position notwithstanding, I've been sucking on that for the last year. That it's been, the basket of stocks that it's against has been doing okay, but my hedge is not. That helped at all.
Well, let's dive in now to the company that you've been, putting your blood, sweat, and tears in every single day. Now it's, it's been incredible to watch the growth here of Liquid Mercury. And I want to know, what is Liquid Mercury? The good citizens of Crypt Nation who are listening, they're convinced that, you know exactly what you're talking about when it comes to options. And so mm-hmm. I'm sure they're going to be convinced that the Liquid Mercury options platform is the one to beat.
Right. Well, thanks. Thanks for that, Bryce. Well, Liquid Mercury is an infrastructure. It's a application layer company that delivers workflow automation, trading tools, trading screens, connectivity, matching engines, liquidity aggregation, and algos to businesses, to institutions. We're a B2B. Now, some of our customers, many of them, white label our stuff out to their customers. And their customers range from high net worth individuals and some individual traders to hedge funds, mutual funds, and other institutions that need to allocate capital to the digital asset world, crypto world. So we're an infrastructure play. We have recognizable names, worldwide recognizable names as our customers. We've hit our stride with critical mass in terms of our feature set and functionality, where we've gotten some really big names. I don't want to share any names, just not to jinx it, but they're recognizable. Some of the biggest agency shops in cryptocurrency use our technology, and we have a token. It's called the Merc, MERC, trades on DeFi and a few overseas CEXs, and we'll be listing on more. But the Merc is a direct play on discounts on our services, and we have a rewards program. So we're all about digital assets. We're really excited. In fact, our token, I think today was the biggest volume day yet. It keeps getting bigger every day. We're just a little new entrant into this. Trades under a penny, but we think it's got a lot of potential.
I love it. And especially when you kind of look at all the things that you guys are doing with traditional institutions, As well as with other, you know, liquidity providers and stuff in the crypto markets that are taking your technology and using it. So I think you guys are making a name for yourself, and I'm really excited. But you know, when you kind of talk to these institutions, you know, I imagine, you know, a sales cycle with an institution who's, you know, multi-billion dollars is quite long. So I'm curious about that, but I'm also, you know, curious just what's typically like the thing that is their biggest like reason why they don't want to get into crypto, or their biggest reason why they haven't yet? And then how do you kind of push them over the line to get over that?
Well, that's a great question, Bryce, because the last year and a half, it's been external market, events that has delayed. Okay, these companies are made of people. People need, they have bosses, they need to justify things they're doing, and some of them get scared. So when Three Arrows happened, or Voyager shit the bed, or Terra Luna collapsed in August of 22, they pull back and they go, ooh, you know, I don't have a gun to my head to do this. I don't want to look bad. Maybe we'll wait.
Totally.
Chilling effect. Then SPF makes his mea culpa after the election of November last year, and they take another step back. Well, that stuff has worked its way through the marketplace. Mm-hmm. Most of those summer of 2022 issues, collapses, pressure points, and breaking the stable coin connection were due to over-leveraged lending. Okay, securities lending, coin lending needed to be bridled. So that got washed out of the market. And then the same Bankman-Fried stuff was just out and out fraud.
Yeah.
He romanced, you know, the politicians so they wouldn't look into him. They romanced the news services by advertising with them so they wouldn't look into him. And he had a clear path, but it wasn't going to last very long. Now that that's been adjudicated, that's washed its way out. The clients are speaking, prices are up, and those prospects of ours that were on the fence are saying, okay, I have the green light. I'm not over my skis. I'm not getting the, you know, evil eye from my senior management.
Yeah.
Let's get to work on this. So, we're seeing that happen right now. It's our most active pipeline that we've seen in the few years that we've been in service and business. And we're really excited for 2024.
Yeah, I love it. So if somebody's watching right now, and maybe they don't work at a financial institution, or they're not at a crypto hedge fund, but they're just an individual who kind of might want to learn how to trade options or already knows how to, is there a way for them to use Liquid Mercury, or perhaps come learn from any resources that you guys offer?
Mm-hmm. We do. At our website, liquidmercury.com, we have a section where individuals and firms can get in touch with us. I typically answer personally myself. I have a team that I work with, but I try to be involved in every response. And we have some options resources. We've been training. I personally have been training options enthusiasts or my clerks in the early days on how to trade options. We have an advanced program as part of our rewards program, but we also just help answer questions or point people to others that we think are basically good enough for us, and we curate some of those third parties. Because if you went to YouTube and just tried to learn on your own, there's so much out there. You need guidance, even.
Yeah.
So there's some really good stuff for free on YouTube, and we try to aggregate, curate, and offer to the people that come and visit us on our website.
Yeah, and you could definitely get led astray if you go down that YouTube rabbit hole. You could just be clicking on random crap.
We'll type in the search options education, and I think there's like 3.2 billion responses. It takes about 9 seconds. And, you know, there's a lot. Obviously, you have education. It's a big topic, but there's a lot. There's a number of rabbit holes off that main rabbit hole. That's for sure.
Yeah. I wanted to ask this actually earlier. Where's the name come from, liquid mercury? I know it's in thermometers, but I'd love to know
right.
kind of the backstory.
Well, it's a mashup of two concepts. Mercury, which was the god of messages, okay, actually was where I came up with the name, because the mercury head dime has what everyone thinks is the winged messenger Mercury, but it's actually was depicted in incorrectly in making that dime. Liberty is actually on the dime, but we took Mercury, which is that, you know, we deal in messages where, you know, cryptocurrency is encoded, secure, encrypted messages zipping around the world. Okay. And then liquid being the fact that we provide aggregation of liquidity. And my previous company was Liquid Point. So we put them together to be Liquid Mercury, where you get the liquidity, you get the messaging. And if you look up Liquid Mercury, you see the element. And then our rewards program is called Element Rewards. So we tie it all together and we tell a big story on that. But I actually have our original logo, and I made these. This is a tie pin, but I had earrings made for the ladies. This is a Mercury head dime, and I bought up a whole bunch of these dimes from like the 1940s, and and that's where our genesis was on that. So we're storytellers too, to a great degree.
No, I love it. I hope those aren't made of mercury. I think mercury is poisonous to the touch.
Mercury is poisonous to the touch. We even have magnifying glasses with the mercury head dime on it. And we're big into lore.
Yeah.
And we have some Roman and Greek mythology experts on our staff. So it's kind of cool.
Well, one of the things that I found that all kind of successful founders and leaders have is they kind of all drink their own Kool-Aid. They really do believe the stories they're telling, and they believe in what they're building. So it sounds like you guys are, you know, you're like that, right? I mean, it's not just a name,
there's a genesis there. We started out as Mercury Digital Assets, and then last year we did a facelift. We changed our logo from the Mercury head dime to our current liquid Mercury for drops of liquidity, and they all have purposes behind it. We work at the speed of trust, and we all to some degree are storytellers, and we like to tell our own story, and we think we do it accurately.
Yeah, I love it. I want to get your viewpoint or any sort of any fun sort of facts or figures that you've noticed in the option market that might tilt you, you know, one way or another. And I'll kind of start. I saw one. I like the guys from Paradigm. They got a great podcast. Really, really sharp sort of traders. And they pulled up this one indicator that was like inter dealer sort of flows, and basically looking at the flows between all the options desks. And they noted that this was now making new lows, all time lows. And his kind of interpretation of this was now the dealers don't need to be trading amongst themselves only. There's now kind of exogenous capital or new flows in retail. So he's saying this is actually a very good, healthy, expanding sort of bullish indicator. And right. I'm curious if you've got any other sort of things like that.
Well, to follow on to that, because that's spot on, and we look at that too. And last week, for digital options, the notional value, or maybe it was in late November, the notional value of the options volume traded exceeded the spot traded. Mm. And that that's a huge indicator because the spot is huge, right? And now you have this derivative, which is a small notional value, the premium, but there's more and more and more volume that it's outstripping the underlying. And it can double the underlying at some point, but that shows the liquidity. And I agree with the notion that they don't have to trade, the pros don't have to trade with each other as much because there are non-pros in the market with lots of liquidity, lots of demand and supply, because options you can sell a lot easier than you can short the token underlying. There are sec lending programs, it's just harder and expensive. So that volume, there's going to be in 2024, Bryce, there will be, to our knowledge, at least four more options exchanges strictly trading crypto on the planet launching. Probably a lot more than that. We're involved with four of them, and they're going to be coming live definitely in the first half of the year. So what's going to happen is Deribit's market share is going to drop from in the mid to low 90s, from what we understand, probably into the low 80s and maybe even to the 70% range. But they will be making more money because the pie will double and maybe even triple.
I see.
With all that cross trade of the different exchanges, liquidity providers trading with them, there'll be linkage. I mean, we did it in the options market 24 years ago, 25 years ago, there was only four exchanges. Next quarter, the 18th will launch. So it's wow. Options does this, and that's what's so great.
Yeah, and one of the kind of emails that I get from listeners every now and again that always stuck out was, hey Bryce, I'm an American. Where do I go and trade options on crypto? And I always sadly just shake my head and just think, man, what's the deal? Why can't Americans trade crypto options? And when's that going to change? Do you have any insight?
Yes. So that's the right question. Why does the SEC preclude us from doing that? Well, the exchange Gemini is launching an options exchange. So that will be happening in the first half of next year. So Americans will get a shot there. Okay. But also CBOE has a digital arm. They're finding their way. Right now, they can't decide whether they're institutional or going to have a retail product. So that'll be, I'm sure they'll get their script right and their roadmap right. The MIAX is contemplating launching a near shore exchange in Bermuda, which would have a nexus to U.S. Clients. They'll be able to sign up there. So this is coming. 2024, you'll get that. But right now, you would have to, Deribit's based in Panama. You'd have to open an account there. I think you'd have to have an offshore account to be able to fling them with the others, which is sad. This is an SEC shortcoming that I think they're going to rectify in the coming months. I think you'll see the rule set start to crystallize in 2024 and allow us to do that here.
Yeah. And I'm hoping that with the Bitcoin ETF and stuff, I mean, I think, there's going to be options markets on that and all sorts of stuff, and they'll get more comfortable there, and hopefully the Ethereum ETF and options there and all of the benefits for having this, cross margining and portfolio margining now with Bitcoin and not having just to outlay, fresh cash. But now it's kind of, much more capital efficient to be buying.
And that's what it's all about. You're hitting the nail on the head. Right now, everything is fully paid for, and it's just too difficult, right?
Yeah. Nobody wants it. Crazy. Tony, we could literally sit here all day. I know you got things to do. I got to get going. I want to have you back on the podcast. I want to make sure we can follow back up and, talk deeper option strategies or kind of just, market updates and stuff, because we love your knowledge, but we want to make sure.
Let's talk it, after the ETF is approved, and we'll Let's talk about those reactions. Yeah.
Well, hey, before I let you go, I always like to ask the pros that come on here, just, you know, for a listener who might just be getting into crypto, it's their first month, it's their first year, whatever. What would you kind of, as a crypto sort of pro, what kind of advice would you give a new person in the industry?
Well, first of all, be careful, start small, because it, you know, it's different than what you're used to in traditional markets. And be very alert. It's good to, I mean, I know some pros that didn't do a test and sent larger amounts of crypto to the wrong wallet. Ooh. So I would say just be careful, but also, you know, get into chat rooms, talk to others, you know, Bryce's audience, you know, can share ideas and share thoughts. I think I've always been about sounding boards. Okay. They don't have to be mentors. They could be peers or somebody else who's new, maybe even a little newer than you, that says, hey, I thought about this. But I think swapping these ideas and finding sounding boards are super important till you feel comfortable, and be disciplined and be careful.
I love it. Hey, couldn't have said anything better. Appreciate your time, Tony. Liquidmercury.com. I want to make sure everybody checks it out. It's in the show notes. Tony, are you on Twitter or anything to do?
Yes.
Can the people follow you?
Power Pro Digital is our Twitter handle. I'm on LinkedIn under my own name. People do reach out to me, but we do have a section in on our website, liquidmercury.com. We talk about our token, the Merc, our tokenomics are there, and we'll answer questions. And especially your audience, if anybody has any specific things, happy to answer them personally.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you. And everybody at home watching, thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you guys enjoyed. And we'll see you back same place, same time next week. Take care.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.